Are You Just Watching is supported by our dearly loved listeners. Special thanks to Tim Martin, Craig Hardy, and Richard French for their monthly support. To help support Are You Just Watching, please go to patreon.com/areyoujustwatching. Are You Just Watching? Episode 55, Interstellar, Part 1. Welcome to the podcast that shares critical thinking for the entertained Christian. I'm Eve Franklin.
I'm Tim Martin.
And boy, have we got a movie to discuss on this episode. Probably another two episodes.
At least.
So get ready for Interstellar, because we're going to be talking about it for a while. I mean, you were the one that originally suggested we do this movie over a year ago. I think it was on our original list. And I just never got around to watching it until very recently.
Yeah, I saw it when it came out in November of 14.
Mm-hmm.
And it was shortly after I had signed on to start doing the podcast with you. As a matter of fact, I think it was before we even had recorded our first podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in and I took notes and I scanned them in and everything. And I had the chance to review them before I watched the movie again in preparation for recording today's episode. And holy moly, this movie is full of itself.
Yes, it is. And, I'm kind of glad we didn't try to do this as a initial while it's still in the theaters, because there is no way I would have gotten down all of the quotes that I want to use and talk about. The weird thing is that when I watched it the second time for notes, because I always watch it first time just for enjoyment, and when I watched it the second time for notes, I was actually stopping it with the captions on so I could copy down the quotes.
I was too. Makes it easier when you've got closed captioning on.
Oh, yes. I love closed captioning. There's just a ton of stuff to talk about. And right off the bat, this is not a Christian movie. This is definitely humanistic all the way. And that's why there's so much to talk about, because their worldview is so distorted.
It's so empty.
Empty. Yes. Incomplete as well. Yeah. So we have a lot to talk about. But initially, I'm assuming you liked the movie initially.
Yes, I do. I do like Interstellar, particularly from a science geek standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
They worked hard at getting the science as close to correct as they could.
It was very well acted. It had great effects. I mean,
oh yeah.
I actually have a problem with some of their science, but I understand where you're coming from.
Right. No, from a purely science fiction, secular science viewpoint, they worked hard at taking out all the evolution stuff. When I'm thinking, how the black hole would look and stuff like that.
Yeah. Though even,
or the wormhole, not the black hole. Excuse me.
Yeah, the wormhole. Yeah, that was interesting. I had some issues with, some of the things they did with their ship, but we can talk about that in just a bit. It had some great effects. It tried really hard to feel real. So I think that was gave it a good atmosphere.
Yeah, this is there's this difference in science fiction between hard science fiction and space opera.
Mm-hmm, right.
And whereas Star Wars is a space opera, this was definitely hard science fiction.
Mm-hmm, right. Right. And
emphasis on fiction.
Emphasis on fiction, yeah. Now, one of the things that really added to this movie, and I think probably more so than it does to some movies, and we always talk about soundtracks, but the Hans Zimmer score for this really added drama. I think
absolutely.
It was amazing. I mean, it's like right off the bat, in one of the very first scenes, the organ just hits this chord and holds it, and it was just a high drama. And it's like that through the whole movie, where it's not just that it adds atmosphere, it's that it adds drama to scenes that isn't there without the music.
Yeah, it builds viewers and listeners' expectations along mm-hmm. with the action on the screen. It meshed so perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I even noticed when I was just listening just to the soundtrack how there's this clock ticking, like when they land on the world with all the water, the Miller planet, and mm-hmm. and as soon as they land, the music kicks in with this clock ticking rhythm, just to let you know that they're on the clock, the time is ticking away. And I didn't even realize that that was part of the soundtrack until I listened to the soundtrack by itself, and I'm like, that's how they added all that tension in there, just that ticking clock, you know.
I don't think I noticed it when yeah. I watched the movie. I'm going to have to go back and listen to just the soundtrack now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and it was actually a couple different pieces in the score had that clock ticking rhythm, and it added that urgency to the scenes that fits so well. I'm going to play a little bit of the score here so people can understand what we're talking about. Beautiful music. If there's anything about this movie that I can rave about, it'll be the music. Overall, I think the movie was fairly clean. What do you think? There was some really bad words in
it. The language.
Yeah.
The language stood out to me. As much as the language stood out like a sore thumb to me,
mm-hmm.
The concepts that they were
swearing over.
Yeah, it was that one that bugged me so much more, particularly during the second viewing.
Mm-hmm.
During the first viewing, I was just sort of sitting back and enjoying, mm-hmm. Even though I was taking notes, I was enjoying the film and taking it all in the first time. This time I was watching it with a much more critical eye, and
mm-hmm.
wow, talk about feeling like I was being preached to by Richard Dawkins. Is that his name?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and there was violence in the movie, but there was, not that I recall anyway, I don't believe there was any sexual content of any sort, not even
no.
innuendo. It was very clean that way.
Yep.
So other than the language and the situational violence, this movie was fairly clean. Of course, it was PG-13, so
yeah.
You would expect it to be mostly palatable. But in general, I did have some general things that I had problems. They were questions that I wrote down while I was watching the movie that I don't think were actually answered. The biggest one I thought was the whole idea that the earth is failing and the plants are all dying and we have to leave to survive, or we're going to suffocate or starve, you know, our two options. It's like, we know how to live in artificial environments. Why didn't they just go into hydroponics and move indoors?
Mm-hmm.
You know, build
Disney's
domes
been doing it for 30 years.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the plants clean the air. They're great filters. And all you need to do is just close out the nitrogen environment that was thriving this mm-hmm. stuff that was killing the plants.
The blight.
So, yeah, it just seems to me that wasn't really well thought out. It's like they had to come up with some premise to save the species and get off the planet, but it didn't work, in my opinion.
They needed a boogeyman.
Yeah.
They needed something to drive them off the planet, and being unable to feed everyone
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, suffering, threatening them with suffocation.
Mm-hmm.
That was their boogeyman for the movie. And I understand, you know, the literary aspect or the creative liberty aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really lacking in a bunch of logic.
Yeah, there was. It was very illogical, and it seems to me like that they avoided the whole, you know, apocalypse with nuclear because that's where everybody else goes, and they didn't want to be predictable. But at the same time, that is really about the only thing that could drive us off this planet. It is a very beautiful, ideal planet, and we can talk about that as a subject later. But just the whole,
just right.
Yeah. But the logic of what they chose to say that we had to abandon the planet, it just didn't hold together. And that bothered me from the get-go. What did you think about that drone that just happened to fly over his pickup?
Yeah, I saw your question, and I don't think that a drone that has been in the air for 10 years is at all far-fetched anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at drone technology now. They can stay aloft with solar power or with fuel cells for a decade. Wouldn't be that difficult. I wouldn't think it would be like a Predator type drone. I would think it'd be something lighter than air or the like, but I think they needed to use a Predator type drone to give it the right feel. And frankly, chasing a hot air balloon through a cornfield just doesn't have the same, doesn't have the same tension, really.
Yeah. That, and you know, it didn't bug me when I watched the movie the first time. It was only the second time around. I was like, but where did it come from?
Yeah.
That just kind of, they've, you know, pretty much lost all their technology and stuff. And suddenly this drone just appears out of nowhere.
And you know, when it's going down the second time I'm watching it, I'm thinking, wait a minute. The drones are falling out of the sky, but the GPS network is all still active more than 10 years down the road.
Well, I guess the drones would be, the satellite network would be above the gravity, but they would still, I mean, and they're solar powered too. So I don't know. I mean, they're outside of the
atmosphere. They still have to have their orbits adjusted. Daily, it must
be.
Or
they'll decay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot to think about there. That, once again, doesn't make any logical sense. But the big one that really bugged me was Endurance, the whole spin on the Endurance. And I understand that when we originally went to space, there was this whole idea that we would have to create gravity.
Right.
The original space stations were, you know, we always dreamed up, we're all, you know, rotating to create gravity.
Yeah.
But we have long since, I mean, we've had space stations up for quite a while now, and we've learned that we don't really need gravity in space for the comfort of the astronauts or anything. I mean, they can even exercise in zero G. Mm-hmm. But the other issue is that the spin on the Endurance is counter to the propulsion. So the way they showed it spinning was it was spinning on one rotation and then pushing on a tangent from that.
Yeah.
And so the propulsion, the actual push of speeding up and slowing down, that would create weight going when you're speeding up on one side of the ship and when you're slowing down on the other side of the ship. And that would be counter to the spin. So that would just completely mess up the gravity on the ship.
Yeah,
anyway.
It would create a huge drag on the propulsion forward.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So that whole thing just seemed kind of, and they made such a point of it. It was like the one astronaut getting sick because they were spinning and all of that. It's like they made such a point of saying, look, we're spinning and look, we're going to shut off the spin and all that kind of stuff. I was just like, was that even necessary? I mean, they probably could have cut 20 minutes out of the movie just by getting rid of that whole thing.
You know why they probably put it in? So they didn't have to film too many zero G scenes.
Ah, yeah, because that is hard to do, to film in under gravity. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the other way of creating gravity, of course, is to create 1G or about 1G worth of gravity just in thrust.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, you know, in the context of the mathematics of the trip that they were doing. I think they went to Mars and used gravity around Mars to slingshot to Saturn or something like that.
No, it looked like they just went straight to Saturn because all they said was.
Except Coop reviews the course with SARS at one point. Is it SARS?
TARS.
TARS.
Yeah.
That's right. SARS is an illness. SARS. And I'm pretty sure they mentioned Mars in there, but it's neither here nor there. I think they were just doing it to make the gravity scenes easier.
Probably. Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. But the thing is like I said, is that propulsion would create gravity. So yep. You wouldn't even need the spin. As soon as the ship starts forward, they would have gravity in the direction they were going. The direction they would be going would be up.
Correct.
And the direction right. they were coming from would be down.
Yeah. But they have to maintain the thrust, which means constant acceleration.
Mm-hmm. But they were going to sleep anyway.
Yeah.
So they were sleeping.
As soon as they went
to
sleep, why even bother maintaining gravity?
Right, exactly. And they slept through all the voyage. And Tarzan was, I guess, controlling the ship.
Yeah.
Case or Tarzan, one of them was. So, yeah, the whole thing just seemed like wasted space in the movie to me because it was even inaccurate.
I don't think this was based on a book. I was wondering, you know, was it based on a book where
they got it wrong in the book?
Yeah, this was the mode of thought at the time of the book, like, mm-hmm. you know, when Larry Niven wrote Ringworld, but I don't believe it was.
Yeah. I don't remember seeing based on anywhere, but who knows? What about you? Did you have any unanswered questions or things that you wanted to just in general bring up?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the acting. I'm a big fan of Anne Hathaway. I'm a moderate fan of Cooper.
Yeah.
Big fan of Michael Caine. You know, they had good name. Oh, John Lithgow is one of my all-time favorites. So they had plenty of big names, and I enjoyed the acting. But there were inconsistencies for me in character motivation that sort of stood out like a sore thumb as the movie went on.
Mm-hmm.
The second time I was watching it, I realized that Murph and Amelia were sort of the same character in two different places. At the start of the movie, Murph is the starry-eyed dreamer,
mm-hmm.
and she becomes a hardcore scientist. And when you first are introduced to Amelia, she's a hardcore scientist who, when confronted with the secret that she's in love with one of the other scientists, becomes the starry-eyed mm-hmm. dreamer all of a sudden. And I felt like that was a bit inconsistent.
Yeah.
I did, and I mentioned at the start, I liked how they tried to make the science accessible,
mm-hmm.
You know, accurate in as much as you're able to present it in this media.
Mm-hmm.
And I still didn't like, I didn't like the end.
Yeah, it seemed a little bit deus ex machina without God.
Yeah, that's a good point. So what that would just be ex machina.
Yeah. Hey, isn't there a movie called that?
I know there's a computer game.
Yeah. I think that they were almost assuming God without God, and that's kind of difficult. And I definitely want to discuss that further because I think that is an error in the worldview that we can.
Yeah. And I want to say, I don't think they were assuming no God. I think they were going the other way entirely and saying man becomes his own God.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah. But there's some errors in that worldview that I want to discuss, but we can
really?
Get back to that.
Are you
later.
Sure?
Yeah.
One or two, maybe?
Maybe just a few. I wanted to go back to your statement about Murph real quick, because I really feel like, you know, the point that you make where she goes from starry-eyed to hardcore, and I think that part of that is the absence of her father.
Yeah.
She felt betrayed by him leaving her, and she was definitely a daddy's girl, and I can understand that being one myself.
And, yeah, she was a tomboy too.
Yeah, and to have your father just walk out, even when you were pleading with him to stay, that just, I think that really developed her personality. So I think that her change was definitely believable. And I see the point that you make about Brand, though.
Yeah. The stay thing was one thing that did actually bug me. And I think it was because I missed something, and I managed to miss it in both viewings. But why did he start his communication with the word stay when he already knew what came next?
Yeah, but I think it was, if you look, and of course we're just kind of talking about this all topsy-turvy because this is the end of the movie.
Yeah.
I think that he went through a series of how do I communicate with her when he was in the black hole, because that initial pushing the books out and making stay was him thinking, mm-hmm. I can just undo all of this and stay with my little girl. And that was his first communication with her. And then Tars appears with the data. And that was when he realized, yeah. Oh, by the way, I think I can communicate this to her. And that was when they kind of worked out together between him and Tars that he couldn't change the past, that he couldn't go back and change the past. It had already happened. He had to affect the future.
Yeah. This is a problem with all time travel movies, mm-hmm. for me. I had the same problem with Looper, which I really enjoyed. It's at some point it seems like the characters just give up on their prior knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
The script says, okay, forget everything in scenes 1 through 4 here, because Coop knew that he started with stay, but at some point got to the where he gave the coordinates.
And that wasn't even the end of it, because the end of it was him giving the data in the watch. So,
which he didn't know when he left.
Because that was the point where he stopped trying to change the past and moved it up to let's affect the future. Let's from the present on. And I like the way they sandwiched those scenes so that you really felt the urgency of her being in the room and waiting on him to put that data into the watch. And even though they were two completely different things, the way they sandwiched those scenes together, you were like, get it in there. Don't leave the watch, you know? So I
did it seem to you like Tars had an unusually complete set of knowledge regarding what these super beings were doing?
Well, I think it was almost a discussion between them, because some of those lines were actually Cooper's lines, you know, where he was saying, oh, this is us in the future. And that kind of thing. Yeah. So I think it was almost a discussion between them, and they kind of worked it out together. It's still kind of weird, because like, that's the first thing that they would think about when they're stuck in this tesseract in the middle of a black hole. Yeah.
Was I the only one who had a problem with the crossover there with Marvel? They got stuck in the Tesseract. I sort of expected Loki to come out. Bad joke?
Yeah, bad joke.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well. As soon as they said Tesseract, I thought, oh, Avengers.
Well, it does have a meaning beyond comic book science.
I know. Yeah. Multidimensional, fractal existence, yada, yada, yada.
Yada, 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 yada.
Fluffy shirt.
Well, that's kind of a good overview of what we liked and disliked about the movie. But what would you like to talk about first? Is there anything that you want to dig into deeply first?
I think the first thing that I would like to get into is the more general sense of how, and there's no easy way to put this, God is completely absent. it is not even representative of a conceivable future, American future,
mm-hmm.
Where nobody has God in their life. There's no evidence that, and we were talking before we started recording,
mm-hmm.
the only evidence of anything from scripture that came up was a reference to Lazarus.
Mm-hmm.
There's no prayer before meals. There's no crucifix jewelry. There's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, that's a nightmare to me.
Yeah.
I can't imagine facing the trials that they're facing without
any kind of spiritual dimension, any faith.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is that in a situation like that, where they've really reduced the population down to its bare minimum and they're just surviving, that would be where faith would thrive. And I mean, if there was any reference anywhere to faith, it would be thriving in those communities, because that's when people turn to God.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's why Christianity thrives so much under persecution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I agree with you. It's a gaping hole in the movie. And it's interesting that then they, at the same time, they kind of pull into this they that seems to be intervening and communicating and trying to push them to do things. And that's all they do is they just call it they.
Yeah. And the characters don't ever seem to question the existence of they,
mm-hmm,
until the very end of the film, where Coop thinks he figures out who they is.
Who they is.
But that, somewhere there's a grammar cop going, oh, that's a citation right there, buddy.
Yeah. Well, let's play a quote about that so that we can give text context.
But something sent you here. They chose you. Who's they?
We started detecting gravitational anomalies almost 50 years ago, mostly small distortions to our instruments in the upper atmosphere. But of all these anomalies, the most significant is this. Out near Saturn, a disturbance of space-time.
At a wormhole?
It appeared 48 years ago.
And it leads where?
Another galaxy.
Now, a wormhole is not a naturally occurring phenomenon.
Someone placed it there.
They?
And whoever they are, they appear to be looking out for us.
Somewhere in their fifth dimension, they saved us.
What the hell is they? And just why they want to help us, huh?
I don't know, but they constructed this three-dimensional space inside their five-dimensional reality to allow you to understand it.
I thought they chose me. They didn't choose me, they chose her.
For what, Cooper?
To save the world.
Yeah, I think that's funny, especially when they start talking there at the end about like being in the fifth dimension, that they saved us. And mm-hmm. I think it's this situation where salvation has to come from somewhere, and it's like the atheist, the humanist doesn't want to believe in God, so they're going to turn God into some amorphous they. And
They're literally witnessing miracles.
Right.
A pattern of dust forms on the floor that happens to be coordinates to a secret military base in Colorado or wherever it was. Mm-hmm.
And what is his daughter?
But the first thing they go to isn't a supreme being. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because they've excluded the supernatural. So what must it be then? It must be somebody from the fifth dimension trying to communicate with us,
right? And that actually ties back to why I feel like it was they were picturing a reality without God in it,
mm-hmm,
because they never even discuss the possibility that it's supernatural,
right? Never comes into their mind.
Right. Coop automatically, Murph in her starry-eyed dreamer phase refers to it as a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
You learn later that that's not even, it wasn't even scary ghost. It was just
Something ghost. Something to name it. Yeah. Because she thought it was, had personality. It was an individual. And so she called it a ghost. Yeah. And I thought that was interesting because that's where that whole discussion comes up.
You said science is about admitting what we don't know.
She's got you there.
If you want to talk science, don't just tell me that you're afraid of some ghost. No, you got to go further. You got to record the facts, analyze, get to the how and the why, then present your conclusions. Deal?
Deal.
So even in this situation where she's addressing something that sounds somewhat supernatural, everybody's mocking her. And it turns into a discussion of, well, how can you prove this scientifically? And
you know, that ties back into the whole reason she got in the fight at school.
Mm-hmm.
We both wrote that quote down.
It's an old federal textbook. We've replaced them with the corrected versions.
Corrected.
Explaining how the Apollo missions were fake to bankrupt the Soviet Union.
You don't believe we went to the moon?
I believe it was a brilliant piece of propaganda that the Soviets bankrupted themselves, pouring resources into rockets and other useless machines.
Useless machines.
And if we don't want a repeat of the excess and wastefulness of the 20th century, then we need to teach our kids about this planet, not tales of leaving it.
So it's the idea, it's like the scientific method has taken place of faith.
Right.
In the existence portrayed in this film, movie.
Yeah. And you know, that whole textbook thing, I even thought about that as just the dumbing down of education, which we see it even happening in our government schools today. It's like you select what you want people to know, and then you change the curriculum in order to fit that worldview or that view of history or whatever. And you force it on people, and you're basically telling them lies, because what they're doing there is, and that's why Coop kind of gave his daughter permission to be misbehaved there, is that it was, you know, hey, she's got the truth. You guys are trying to make her believe lies, and I'd rather her believe the truth, you know.
I got the impression that the teacher really believed
that she definitely,
the thing was faked.
Yeah, and she was very young. You noticed how young she was. And so, yeah, I think that was that whole presenting truth as, or presenting lies as truth, and hiding the truth in order to, like they had a purpose there. They wanted to present or preserve this caretaker mentality and, you know, lose the scientific mind, and which is very weird in my mind.
Yeah,
because when the world is destroying itself, that's when you want to have innovators. You want people to be able to think beyond survival.
Is it necessity is a mother of invention?
Yeah.
No, necessity is a mother of fertilizer. What? Come on.
Yeah, that makes no sense to me whatsoever. Of course, they explain that a little bit in the discussion that Coop has with the older Dr. Brand.
Well, when they realized that killing other people was not a long-term solution, then they needed us back in secret.
Why secret?
Because public opinion wouldn't allow spending on space exploration. Not when you're struggling to put food on the table.
I somewhat get that, but...
I think I came away with the impression, at least after the first viewing, maybe after the second, that the population of the planet had exceeded its capability to produce food.
Mm-hmm.
But then they muddy the muddy that water by throwing in the blight, and I mean, can you imagine having an entire population eating okra
and corn?
Yeah,
okra and corn. That's it.
I do appreciate that the entire world's population is reduced to eating strictly American crops.
Yeah. Well, you know, and like I said, there was a solution to that they completely missed, because a good bit of our food nowadays comes out of season.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because it's raised in greenhouses and other forms of forced growth. And we don't need, granted, we are the breadbasket. I mean, we have these great plains, and we actually pay farmers not to raise crops on them because we don't want to glut the market. But at the same time, a lot of our other foods, like fruits and vegetables, are raised out of season and forced growth. And there's no reason they couldn't have moved something like that into a protected environment and kept doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So that just brings it back to what I think is a major fallacy in the whole premise of the movie.
Yeah, it sort of ignores the history of World War I and World War II,
mm-hmm.
how the industrial machine pulled together in such remarkable strength
mm-hmm.
during the lead up to World War II in particular and during the war. And innovation was everywhere. I mean, we had more technology jumps in 38 through 45. We had nuclear power, or we had the atomic weapons then.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality of Interstellar, they're facing this huge crisis. And what do they put their engineers to doing? Growing corn and automating combines.
Yeah. And it sounds like a lot of the computerized like satellite technology and that kind of stuff, they were asked to like drop bombs because there was that one comment to Dr. Brand about, what happened to you after the last I heard about you was when you refused to drop bombs on, in this mm-hmm. other country. And so they made it sound like they discarded all of our technology because it was too warlike. And anything has, something that can be used for war can also be used for good. So
it's all tools.
It's all tools. Yeah.
You can kill a guy with a hammer just as easily as you can kill a guy with a knife or a gun.
Mm-hmm. But those are also can be used. Knives can cut things up that you need cut up, and very useful survival tool. Without knives,
yeah.
It'd be really hard to survive. And hammers as well. And even guns have utility as well. So
yeah.
Everything has a dual purpose. You can use it for harm or you can use it for good. So to discard an entire part of science just because it could be used for war would not make any kind of logical sense whatsoever, especially when you need everything to survive.
When I was working on my notes, that put me in the thought of what Paul says about the body of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really long scripture, so I'll put it into the show notes.
Right.
But it's the part where he proposes the foot should say, because I'm not a hand, I do not belong to the body, but that would not make it any less a part of the body. And that's mm-hmm. sort of what how all the parts of the body work together. Is the same way that our society works.
Mm-hmm.
We just couldn't exist without our engineer. We couldn't have the type of existence that we have without our engineers.
Yeah.
And without our farmers. And
everybody has a good place.
Our bankers and lawyers even, mm-hmm.
I think we could do without lawyers.
They all serve a specific purpose in our society.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them are good, but they serve a purpose. And the reality of Interstellar, it just throws that all out.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, even in my notes, Coop and Murph go for this multi-hour drive when they go looking for the coordinates.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, I wonder where they got the gas.
Yeah, they never mentioned like a fossil fuel shortage or anything. Of course, he's running his whole farm on pretty much solar power
or yeah.
fuel cells. But yeah.
But you don't see any on the truck,
and
do you?
And I also wondered. No. And the other thing was even the tires, because they remember when he blew the tire and his son said that was the spare, And I'm like, where do they get new tires? I mean, where's the tire manufacturing? Because even those mm-hmm. big, farm machines have really big tires on them, and those don't last forever. And
yeah, it seems like the economy would have collapsed long before they got to this the state that is presented in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Even in my mind, and I'm no economist, nor did I play one on TV, but even in my mind, past the barter phase,
mm-hmm. Yeah, hunter-gatherer almost. If they were that desperate just to feed people, I think a lot of the whole organization of the things would have just completely fallen apart.
I also think that the sinful nature of humanity would have been more prevalent. You wouldn't have seen, you know, ball games going on like that if such a crisis were going on.
There would be mobs, people, and looting. People would be stealing from each other because, you know, there wouldn't be enough food to go around. And so people would be stealing from each other. They wouldn't just be packing up and moving out of towns. They would, I mean, people would be like falling to their lowest form in just the whole organization of society. And I think that's also just shows an error in humanist thinking, because they think at heart man is basically good. And so they don't see how circumstances can bring out the bad in people. They think that bad people are just for some reason bad, that it's something that some sickness or disease in them that can be trained out of them, because at heart man is born good. But that's the contrary view to what we're taught in scripture, that the heart is deceitful and wicked, and that man and in his lowest form without God is going to be really bad.
Yeah.
and bad circumstances.
It's selfishness.
Yeah, selfishness. And so, yeah, I don't see people working so peacefully together in order to feed a population. I think that it would all fall apart. I mean, it would turn into mobs and all kinds of stuff. You know, people would be living inside compounds. They wouldn't have farmhouses out in the middle of nowhere where they don't lock the doors.
Yeah. there's a lot of, you know, suspense of disbelief that they have to set up quite a bit to create the circumstance that they want.
Right.
And again, well acted, very well acted movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the cinematography, the soundtrack, all very enjoyable.
Right.
So, you know, as much complaining as I'm doing about the nitpicking here.
It almost sounds like we don't like the movie, which we did like it. It was just one of those situations where we see a lot of the problems with it. And and they're problems worth mentioning, because it's just something that if you're not watching with your critical thinking on, you can just accept some of that and it can affect the way you think of things. But you don't want to just sit through a movie blandly and not think about some of this stuff. And so, you know what, we have a ton more to talk about. I think we'll wrap this episode up and tune into another one. What do you think?
We didn't even make it a third of the way.
Yeah, I mean, this is crazy. There's so much, and I want to make sure that we kind of leave these in bite-sized pieces so we don't wear people out with this discussions. So anyway, we're going to wrap this up and come back to, I think, probably a discussion on the topic of love in the movie, which had a very interesting...
God, but there is love.
Love, yeah. It's like this interdimensional force of some sort. And also the specialness of Earth, which we kind of mentioned at the beginning of this, but I want to, you know, deal with it a little more. Talk a little bit about the evolution that's in this movie. And so, yeah, well, there's a lot more to talk about. So we're going to come back in another episode. If you'd like to comment, do go to our show notes. The show notes for this episode will be at areyoujustwatching.com/55. And you can call us at 903-231-2221 or email us at feedback@areyoujustwatching.com. And don't forget to support us on Patreon. Oh, and of course... do visit us and follow us on Facebook, where we kind of like to start discussions if possible. So
yeah,
definitely like us on Facebook. We actually post a lot of stuff on Facebook that never shows up in our feed. So if you're not following us on Facebook, please do. And do subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. And check out if you go to our website, we have some promotion and supporting options beyond Patreon. We have some options where you can purchase things on Amazon, and we get a kickback from that. So there's some other ways that you can help out the podcast if you're not able to give financially on a monthly basis. So I believe that's it. Thank you for listening. And don't just watch.
Are You Just Watching is a proud member of the Noodle Mix Network at noodle.mx. Our opening vocal talent was thanks to Mariah. The theme song is used courtesy of Answers in Genesis. For more great podcasts like this one, visit the Noodle Mix Network at noodle.mx. That's noodle.mx.